You're locked into Leveling the Field, a women's sports podcast ran by women for women. I'm your host, Tamia Kay, and today we are a little small in number, but I got my girl, Alani J, in the building, and we're going to talk some sports.
What's up? What's good in the hood? It is your favorite female sports journalist, Alani J.
All right, so just a little breaking news. We're going to get into the WNBA and the Players Union. They are still negotiating a new deal about pay and how league money is shared. The league has set a March 10th deadline to agree on the main terms of that deal. But here is the problem. The WNBA draft is scheduled for April 14th, and the 2026 regular season is set to begin on May 8th. So this deadline is coming just weeks before the draft and about 2 months before tip-off. If an agreement is not reached, there is a real possibility that the season could be delayed. The players have adjusted their pay requests to try to move things forward, but there is still a significant difference between what the league is offering and what the players want. And remember, 98% of players voted to authorize 98% of players voted to authorize a strike if necessary. So this is not just paperwork. The clock is ticking. WNBA players are not just getting paid a lot compared to other professional leagues. And as the league grows with higher viewership, more engagement, and more national attention, players are asking for a bigger share of that growth. The league is expanding, TV numbers are rising, sponsorships are increasing. So now the question is not just about contracts, it's about value. Do these players deserve more? And if so, why?
Honestly, the WNBA does deserve more pay. But again, it comes with time. So we just got to see what will happen over time and, you know, who's going to put up the big bucks for us.
I feel like it's a very complicated situation because the league's revenue and et cetera was at a very low point at one period of time. And then within a year or 2 years' time, everything transitioned to where we were receiving more sponsorship. There were more people watching, more engagement. So I believe that the league wants to pay the players what they are owed and wants to give them the benefits that they're asking for. But the issue is, it's a slow growth, and I don't think players really understand that. Even though it accelerated technically on paper and all other aspects, I think you are also looking at people who are used to a tradition and who are used to things being one way, and they're trying to get acclimated and learn these different roles which they are responsible for and learn how, okay, how do I split this money in this type of way and how do I keep this player happy?
Yeah, you got a point.
So just to talk a little bit more about it, do you think it's because of workload? Do you think it's because of visibility, revenue growth, market value, principal? Like, these are the things that we're diving into. So when a league grows, should the player automatically receive help from that growth? And I feel like that's something that I was kind of like alluding to. What do you think, Alani?
Honestly, I feel like players should automatically receive help from that growth. Because when we think about the NBA and the NFL, like, they will automatically get it too. So it's just, honestly, it's just a matter of who and when is going to happen.
I feel that. So in your opinion, is women's basketball at a point where pay should reflect visibility, or do you feel like they should wait their turn?
When you say visibility, what do you mean?
Like, just viewership, engagement, fan engagement. Like, they've gone from like smaller numbers to larger numbers with turnout in the crowd as well as watching the games at home.
Absolutely. The WNBA and just all women sports right now is getting a lot of eyes on them. With the help of, you know, having LSU and they have Fly J and they had Angel Reese, they were kind of like helping women, you know, get the eyes put on them, especially at the college level. So yeah, definitely, because college women's sports and just women's sports overall is getting that views. Absolutely.
I feel like when we are comparing like NCAA and WNBA, we also have to look at like tradition, alumni, legacy, all of the things that come with college basketball versus professional sport. And I feel like that's what makes it easier for NCAA to get the viewership and get the engagement and are able to pay out NIL money, et cetera, because there is legacy and there's foundation when it comes down to those teams. With the WNBA, it's still fairly new, and I feel like players don't really pour back financially into the league, if that makes sense. So retiring players, I don't really see them investing and trying to really put their money back into the league. And I feel like it kind of leaves the operational managers and CFOs, CEOs up to deciding how the progression of the league might go. So when I say that, like, technically, if a league is growing in revenue, a player should benefit, but they also have to go off of operational costs, expansion investments, infrastructure expenses. So revenue growth doesn't always mean immediately you're getting a salary jump, but over time they should receive this growth. And I think we are in the midst of them just trying to figure that out right now. Like, are we at the point where players should receive automatic financial increase, or are they still trying to bridge those gaps and put money in places that the players might not necessarily see directly?
That is true, because even having to think about just like the facilities that are being used, like, right, pretty sure, you know, some of those facilities could get money poured into them. And especially at the college level, a lot of our college athletes, you know, their main focus is getting to the big league. And so once they get to the big league, you know, the rest is on them. But like, even for FAMU specifically, we had LeBron James, you know, pay for Al Lawson and how good it looks now. So right, it's like, it can happen, but it has to be what they want to do.
Exactly.
So,
and I feel like that's why it's so important to have alumni and people who have played in the league or who have sponsored certain teams continue to invest in those programs, because it's easier in college. But when it comes down to like professional sports, if those former players and people who are holding a lot of financial responsibility over the league are not as invested with the program or invested with the team, then it leaves it up to the people who are holding the money to make the decisions. So that's enough about that. We're talking about value on the biggest stage in women's basketball, but value starts long before the WNBA. So let's zoom in, because right here on campus, FAMU women's basketball is closing out its season, and support matters at every level.
Well, the Lady Rattlers sit at 7-20 and are currently on a 5-game losing streak. Goodness gracious. But still, they have been competitive stretches this season where the effort and the talent on the floor do not fully match the record. But the real conversation we want to highlight is attendance. Doubleheaders, we constantly see strong turnout for the men's game. The women's game, which tips off first, does not always receive the same level of energy or support. So this then becomes a basketball discussion. It's actually more than it. It becomes a campus engagement discussion. How do we support women's basketball when the record is not shiny?
That's such a funny question to me, because where is the Rattler pride on all aspects? Like, it seems as if our fans, our students, the people who support FAMU, who bleed the orange and green, they only come out when the teams are winning. And this can be tracked all the way from football down to tennis.
Absolutely. I think it's because I was actually, I had the opportunity to talk to some alumni. Mm-hmm. One of the alumni, he sits in our student section. And he even says, like, you know, back then there was so much more Rattler pride.
Right.
So I really think it comes with the generation. Granted, I think I like Gen Z. you know, yeah, that was a hard like there. But I just feel like we're so concerned within our own lives, mm-hmm, that when it's not something that is like, oh, let's go do it. Like, if, right, if we're not getting any enjoyment out of it, we don't do it.
Right.
And so regardless if it's supporting, it's just, I think it's a generational thing.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, we could look at, and this is my favorite thing to look at, is parties. Like, when you go to a party now, mm-hmm, you got wall standers, mm-hmm, you got hookah people, and mm-hmm, you know, it's just like, it's so much going on in this one vicinity. But you look at old parties and everybody was dancing.
Yeah.
So it's just one of the things where, as a generation, we got to kind of like make life simple again. But we got these computers, these mini computers in our hands, 25/8. It's a generational thing. But I was actually telling somebody two weeks ago. And I was like, hey, I feel like in order to get more traction for women's, the guys got to play first.
Right.
And then somebody was like, well, you know, even if, like, yeah, that's true, but they could still leave. And I'm like, you're right. Mm-hmm. And then it's even been where when the men's game, we was down probably about 10 points. And you just see everybody leaving. It's like, dang, like, we're supposed to stay here to the alma mater, and y'all are leaving.
Yeah.
So I think that definitely plays a factor on our team and the confidence that they have.
I like the fact that you brought up the comparison between a party and the basketball games, because if you think about it, nobody wants to go to a lame party. Nobody wants to go to a party who someone is hosting and they're not known. And I feel like it is a generational thing, because like you said, back in the day, people used to be in the house parties packed from shoulder to shoulder. It didn't matter. And that's how it was up here on the hill at FAMU. So I'm challenging the students, like, find your sense of pride. You get into the games free anyway. You need something to do for the evening. So come out and show out and show support. And I also feel like that's why it's so critical for us to have Leveling the Field, because we are bringing the attention to women's sports on campus. We are putting out video content for different sports teams here on campus that don't get as much recognition as they should. Because at the end of the day, all of these women are D1 athletes, and they deserve the recognition and support from the team that they decided to sign and play for.
Right. Well, if engagement is low, how can Leveling the Field strategically use its platform to help grow visibility for the platform?
Like we just said, you know, just continue to show up to games, get to know the players, develop relationships with the coaches, post content for them, just show them that we care and that we want to give them the same even playing ground as men in sports.
Absolutely. Well, as of right now, the Lady Rattlers are playing against Grambling State in Louisiana, looking to respond after Thursday's 80-61 loss to Southern. Looking ahead, Thursday, March 5th, y'all, March 5th, marks senior night at 6 p.m. inside the Al Lawson Center as FAMU hosts Bethune-Cookman. With seniors Anaya Subrats, Camille Jackson, and Briage Robinson will be recognized for their time and contributions to the program. It is an important moment in the season as it is acknowledge the careers of the student athletes who have represented FAMU at the Division I level. Senior night is traditionally one of the most meaningful home games of the year, and it will be notable to see the level of student presence and campus engagement surrounding the event. Well, if senior night does not generate strong campus presence, is that a reflection of the team's performance or a reflection of how women's sports are prioritized?
I think it's a little bit of both. The Lady Rattlers obviously do have to take some accountability for the season that they are having. Not to say that they're not talented, but they're not winning
right
as much as they could and as much as their talent shows that they are able to.
Right.
So I feel like if people don't show up, it is kind of a reflection of where they are in their season. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the students and alumni also have to take accountability of the fact that they do not have
Rattler
as
pride.
Strong of a pride. Yeah, as strong of a Rattler pride as they could have, because if we're gonna say we bleed orange and green, we got to bleed orange and green all the way through and through.
Right. And another thing, because I see this so much during football season and homecoming, and we love to say we brag different.
Mm-hmm.
We can't brag different if we're not there supporting all teams
exactly.
And all sports. So with that being said, let's go ahead and cover some more college basketball.
Absolutely. As we close out the regular season and head into March Madness, this conversation about engagement becomes even more relevant. The growth in women's college basketball is measurable. ESPN reported 9.9 million viewers for last year's national championship, and Nielsen's data showed it had a larger TV audience than the men's final. So that tells us the interest in women's basketball is not symbolic, but it's large. So how has NCAA women's basketball successfully increased fan engagement? And what does that say about the direction of the sport overall?
I could definitely say that it's getting more traction. And I'm not talking about necessarily the physical, like, there at the game traction, but I'm saying, like, on TV.
Yeah.
Like, I done walked in and watched my homeboy watching a college women's basketball game.
Yeah.
And he's, like, glued to the screen. So, honestly, it just shows that, you know, not only is the games getting better, but also it's a lot more entertaining.
Yeah. I think we have to thank the media for a lot of it.
Yeah.
Just because they have developed storylines between players And as much as people like to pin Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark against each other, we have to give them a lot of credit when it comes down to increasing fan engagement and viewership.
Angel Reese has a podcast now.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly. Angel Reese doing her thing. All right.
She didn't pay. She paid her mom's mortgage off or something like that. Like, it's the, and that's why I kind of want to go back on my statement, but we, as women, we are getting some of the big bucks. But like you said, it's just like a slow burn. It's a slow progress. Because I don't think that with the salary women were getting back then, I don't think Asia Reese would have been able to pay, you know, her mom's bills like that. So.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And then we have NIL. So NIL is getting players a little bit more money. So that way they're able to build their own individual brand. And then with that come sponsorships, endorsements with whoever they sign to. And they technically have to become more than just a basketball player. And that's what I'm loving about college basketball are the storylines, getting to know the player outside of them playing basketball. Because we've had great women basketball players before. We've had Maya Moore. We've had Elena Deladon. We had Aja Wilson and so on and so forth if you want to go further back. But we only knew them as a one-dimensional figure, and that was as a basketball player. Mm-hmm. We didn't know about their personal life. We didn't know what they like. We didn't know that they're into makeup, hair, whatever they're into, outside of players like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. We know Caitlin Clark for being probably one of the greatest women basketball shooters of all time at this point. But when it came down, and I just want to specifically talk about Angel Reese because I thought that she did this in such a business strategic move, and I love her for that. She has created her own storyline with her and Falashe being friends at LSU. They had their storyline. And then when she departed on her own, she made sure that she took that NIL money and she invested in it. And she created just avenues for her to really just build her own brand. I believe she's partnered with, who is she partnered with for makeup? I can't remember.
Woo.
That's a good question. But I think she's partnered with like a lot of different brands, and that makes a player more personable, especially for younger girls, especially for the younger girls who are not as sports savvy just yet, who are still developing. It gives them an opportunity to know, like, I can be more than a basketball player. I can be interested in more than one thing, and that can ultimately make my personality. Basketball does not have to be my entire identity.
Literally.
So that's why I feel like that's why NCAA has just really increased. I think it's really just the storylines and getting to know the players on a deeper level.
Right. And so, yeah, Angel Reese actually partnered with Maya Organics. I remember seeing her. I just can't think of it, which is amazing because I want to say as a young girl growing up, I wasn't really in tune with sports. Look, I really didn't even like the news. I only liked the news when it was talking about shark findings and stuff. So now, like, growing into my adult self and getting into sports, my viewpoint of playing sports has changed. Not only because I play sports, but also, like, seeing how all of these women have softer sides to them. They're not just straight ball. Back then, I used to think, you had to be like a tomboy to want to play.
Right.
Versus now, you could be the girliest girl in the world.
You see, they be wearing makeup and their hair done, nails done, everything did. And we can even look at Sha'Carri Richardson. I feel like she also is another trailblazer when it comes down to just being more than an athlete.
She
wears
fly.
Yeah, fly
nails,
every time.
Like, and I think that seeing her for the first time was like, you can do that.
Yeah,
like,
you could be a whole woman and still play your sport.
You got Angel Reese with her lashes and her little blush on.
Yeah.
Like, it's just those things that I'm just growing up. And I'm like, okay, I could have played a little b-ball. I might not have a skill set, but you know.
Yeah, but just a little PSA. This isn't for just the average player. Please make sure you know how to play your sport before you decide to be wearing all that stuff and then your hair slinging in your face and distracting you. Because one thing I cannot stand is watching somebody who got all that going on and it's distracting them from being able to play their sport. So I'm just throwing that PSA out there.
Look,
you do what you want, but for me, I don't want to see it.
I played soccer one of our games. I had my little silk press done. It was silky too. Man, I was like, let me just throw on the headband. I'm be good. Nope.
I know that thing was curled up by the time the game was over.
I had to go get it redone next day. It was so bad.
I'm already knowing. Oh, and you guys, I did promise y'all some game pick recap. So let's get into it. Let's get into it because we did a little bit of game picks last week. And I just want to go over who won and who sat out a little bit. So all three of us picked South Carolina over Ole Miss, and that one was easy. They won 85-48. So we'll take that win. Yeah. But Michigan, yeah, we all picked Michigan, and Iowa said, no, not today. The lights were brighter than expected, and they won 62-44. So I believe that humbled us very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big hit. So for Missouri and LSU, Alani J and I chose Missouri. And Serena, I think hers was kind of inconclusive. I don't know which side she picked. But LSU turned around and they won 108-55. So honestly, Serena might have played that the smartest. And then the big one, TCU versus Iowa State. When I tell y'all that was a game, I told y'all that was going to be a game.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness. We got to recap that. So Serena and Alani J picked TCU, and I went with Iowa State because I'm an Audie Crooks fan. But TCU won 80-73. So I'm going to hold that L, and I'm going to hold it boldly. Mm-hmm. But let's really talk about it. That TCU and Iowa State game was box office, like I said it was going to be. And they delivered. Audie Crooks had 28 points and was dominant inside for Iowa State. But then Olivia Miles answered with 21 and completely controlled the pace late, which is why TCU was able to close it out 80-73. That game had shot making, runs, momentum swings, everything you want headed into March. And low key, that might have been the best game of the weekend. So, Alani, let's just talk March real quick for a second since mm-hmm. it's right there. If these two teams were on opposite sides of the bracket, which one do you trust more to handle tournament pressure?
To handle the tournament pressure?
Mm-hmm.
We talking about TCU in Iowa? Iowa?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to lie. I probably would still pick TCU. If we're going to be honest, just because they held up so well this past game. But I do feel like because of the loss, I do feel like Iowa would try to come back.
Yeah, of course. You know, a team is always going to sit there, watch film, and figure out what went wrong, especially when you're going into a tournament and a tournament as big as March Madness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the stats from the game, and it looks like Audie Crooks carry, which she normally does, but she did have a little bit of help from Williams with 15 and Brown with 11. But when I compare it to TCU's stats, Olivia Miles is not the only one that's scoring big buckets. Suarez is actually a very sleeper forward, and she can shoot from the outside, and she can also score on the inside. She had 19. Sylvia, another center down low, she had 11. And then the guards all contributed. They have at least 8 players who scored. So I do feel like TCU is more well-rounded. And I feel like when it comes down to March, it's about the power of the guards. The centers do hold it down. And as long as they control the boards, you know, you could possibly win the game. But if you have outside scorers, like my coach always used to tell me, 3 points are more than twos. So
yeah,
if you outscore a team around the arc, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be the ones that win.
Right. And I mean, I've seen it firsthand with, you know, just the game that I've attended here at FAMU. I've literally watched the other team get 3-pointers back to back to back. And it took us either we lost because we couldn't get our 3-pointer, or it was kind of nerve-wracking to just see if we was going to get it back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. In order to win, you have to score the ball.
I see.
For sure. What kind of team usually makes a deeper run in March? A team that's built around one star player or a team that feels more balanced overall?
Balanced.
Absolutely.
You can have a star player, but, you know, Lord forbid, the star player gets hurt.
Yeah.
Then what?
Yeah. I feel like UConn is the best example of a team that has a star player, but they still have players around them who know their role, can execute their role in the best way possible, and is well balanced all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Geno is an amazing coach for that. Dawn Staley does the same thing with South Carolina, and that's why those are the top two teams in NCAA currently and in history.
Yeah, when you have a well balanced team, everybody can help out.
Yeah.
Everybody has the confidence in knowing, okay, you know, my partner got me, my teammate has me.
Right.
So yeah, definitely having that balance, it works. I mean, you gotta think about a family. Like, if my dad is, you know, the head honcho of the house, but mama, she just do whatever dad says, it's like there's no balance. There's no team effort. Yeah. So that's kind of how I look at it.
And I like your comparison with the family, because let's just think about that real quick. If we have a family of three, mama, daddy, and all the kids are under the age of not being able to hold a job, and daddy gets sick, but mama is a stay-at-home mom,
right,
that financially cripples the household.
Absolutely.
But if both parents are working and one gets sick, then the other can carry their weight. And the same thing goes on in March tournament. We see players that get hurt all the time. Players get sick. Life circumstances withhold them from being able to play, eligibility, getting into it with the coach and being argumentative. All of these things play into effect in March. And if you have a team that's one-dimensional, mm-hmm, and their star player goes down, there goes your entire chance of winning the tournament if everybody else cannot execute their roles.
Exactly.
Exactly. So do you think this year's tournament is wide open, or do we already know who the real contenders are?
I don't ever think a tournament is wide open, because you never know what these teams have focused more on. You know, watching film, I've seen it firsthand. Watching film, and you'd be like, oh, I messed up there. Oh, this happened there.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like we got some contenders.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you just don't know.
That's true. My coach used to always say, any team can win on any given night. You just have to execute it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the tournament is wide open, but due to pedigree, I'm definitely saying I see South Carolina and UConn back into the championship if they are on opposite ends of the bracket, which 9 times out of 10 they will be.
Yeah.
But some sleeper teams that I feel like are going underrated currently are TCU,
mm-hmm,
Vanderbilt.
Yep.
Outside of that, I haven't really seen any teams that are pushing in the direction that I think that they can withstand. And
how do we feel about LSU?
I see LSU going into Elite Eight, but I feel like Kim Mulkey has her work cut out for her as far as trying to get her entire team on board and everybody just contributing in the way that is best for the team. They have to definitely work on strengths and weaknesses, I feel, with that team. I'm not going to say that they're one-dimensional anymore, just because I know that they have scores. I like the way that Flashe played against South Carolina. But as far as just getting everybody on board and contributing at the same time, doing what the team needs in order to win the game,
mm-hmm,
and maintain and stay consistent, up until that point, I don't really see them going to the championship. But I do see them getting to the Elite Eight.
Okay. Well, we have been talking about March, so let's bring it back home for a second. FAMU's women tennis team is back in action tomorrow morning. They are hosting Georgia State at 10 a.m., and this is one of the non-conference matchups for the Lady Rattlers. Amiya, in a match like this, what matters more, getting the win or building rhythm and confidence as the season moves forward?
Well, with the tennis team, they haven't played anybody in the SWAC as of yet, and I feel like right now they should be using these games as practice and as momentum boosters, working on the things that they are strong at, tweaking the things that they are weak at, mm-hmm, and just really using this time as a learning tool up until their first SWAC matchup.
Honestly, I'll say building rhythm and confidence, I feel like that helps any team. So let's just see what they do. But as far as Georgia State, they come in at 2-5 so far this year. They have picked up a couple solid wins, but they have taken some tough losses, including a 7-0 loss to North Florida. The last time these two teams met, Georgia State won 6-1. So this is an opportunity for FAMU to try and flip that result.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for the Lady Rattlers, this feels like a chance to sharpen things up and build with some consistency. If they grab that double point early and carry the energy into singles play, they could really set the tone moving forward.
For sure. I feel like they definitely have to come out swinging hot in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then with the singles match, they can, I won't say slag off a little bit, but they can kind of rest assured that they are up a few in points. And we talked about that a little bit with the last episode. Doubles are highly important at the start of the game. The sooner you get the doubles done, the greater chance you have to rest a little bit and be prepared for that singles matchup. But before we move on, I do want to give a quick shout out to Reagan and Genesis. I had the chance to interview these two ladies after their home match against Troy earlier this season. And we see the work that they're putting in on the court, and we're paying attention. We are listening to you, ladies, and we're going to continue highlighting our women's athletes through this platform. All right, so we've covered the courts. Now let's step into the batter's box for a minute. Let's talk about FAMU softball. Since leaving the HBCU Invitational, the Lady Rattlers have hit a tough stretch against some non-conference opponents. After competing well earlier in this season, they have taken a few losses at the FIU tournament and now in the Charge On Classic. But this is where scheduling really comes into play. A lot of coaches intentionally build tough non-conference schedules. So what you would do is you would face teams outside of your league, sometimes with deeper rosters, sometimes stronger pitching staffs, because it prepares you for conference play. It exposes weaknesses in the team early and forces you to make adjustments and helps you figure out what works before SWAT matchups really start to matter. If you compare how FAMU performed at the HBCU Invitational versus these outside conference matchups, you can clearly see the level of competition shift. That doesn't mean the team has fallen off, it just means that they are being tested. Now the real question is how the ladies are planning to respond. They're back in action tonight and again on Sunday, so this is an opportunity to adjust, reset, and apply what they've learned from this stretch. Sometimes a hard schedule is not about stacking wins, it's about sharpening your lineup before conference play. So Alani, do you think playing together non-conference teams early actually helps more than it hurts, even if it comes down to a few losses?
I honestly, as a former athlete, you know, I'm gonna plug that in every time.
Yeah, me too.
just so you know, I got a small athletic bone in my body. I do feel like playing these tougher teams early on, it may not be what we want to see because, mm-hmm. I mean, who truly wants to lose, right?
Yeah.
But I do feel like it helps the team understand where they lack at early on. So mm-hmm. that way, when we play these teams again, if we play them again.
Yeah.
We know what to do. Just because playing tough teams, it can definitely be like, dang, we really suck.
Yeah.
If, you know, you feel like you really suck, but at the same time, just watching film, learning from your mistakes early on, as like we did as kids. Like, mm-hmm. we knew, you know, all right, we're going to try to get up and walk, and we may fall. Learning that early on, it just helps us be better and yeah. have better strategies.
I agree. I feel like playing tougher competition helps you play up to their level mm-hmm. versus playing down to someone else's level or just playing on your regular pace. It's almost like you practice how you play.
Yep.
Just like that song, just like that saying. Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just like that saying, you practice how you play.
Mm-hmm.
And when you practice against harder teams, because that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a practice. It's not a real game.
Right.
But once you practice against tougher competition, when you get ready to play people who are on your level, you'll be better. And maybe that's something that FAMU women's basketball should take into account next season. Maybe mm-hmm. they should play a harder competition so that way when they do match up against SWAC level teams, they play at the level of the competition that they played previously instead right. of stooping down to their level.
Right. Which also, and this is just my theory on it, but, you know, at the beginning of the season, you're eager, you're hungry, you're excited.
Right.
So I feel like, and not to say that we've gotten complacent,
mm-hmm.
probably just a little bit, but I do feel like, you know, when you play those harder teams in the beginning, you're more of like, okay, let's do it. Like, yeah. you know, it's been a minute since I touched the court. I'm ready. I'm energized. Versus when you've been playing for weeks, it's like, all right, like,
yeah.
okay, we've been losing. I'm tired. I'm ready to just get it over with. Mm-hmm. And I can say that as an athlete, at one point I had a season where I was like, yo,
yeah.
what are we doing? So, yeah, definitely playing them tougher teams early on, I feel like could help.
Yeah, and no shade to Florida State, but that worked. That backfired on them when they played Alabama because that was the only game that we won.
Ooh.
And that was crazy. But that's neither here nor there anymore. When conference play starts, do you think anyone is going to remember these early losses, or do you think it's about how you finish?
It's about how you finish.
Yeah.
And I can say that just as a person in the world.
Yeah.
It's about how you finish every single time. Sometimes them starts can derail how you finish. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the day gonna end.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, me specifically, I don't remember what happened in the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. But I remember what happened last week.
Right.
And so it's all about, okay, yeah, you might have been down early on, but you're finishing strong and you've put yourself and your team in the area to where y'all are probably number two or number three in, you know, in the seed. So it just, in the SWAC, I'm sorry. So it just depends on the team. But I do feel like we got some work to do all around.
Yeah. And I think it's something about being able to just really appreciate a Cinderella story from a team who came from nothing or came from a whole bunch of losing streaks and then turned around the program. And at the end, they either won a championship or they went as far as the Elite Eight, Final Four, et cetera. Like, I just love stories like that. I love the underdog teams. Not saying that our softball team is an underdog by any means, but I'm just comparing the situation. So I feel like they're doing exactly what they need to do in order to build a great program, play tough teams, play tougher competition, play teams outside of the SWAC. So that way, when you go to play the SWAC, you do things like you did at the HBCU Invitational and you mollywop everybody that you come across.
Yeah, you got a great point there.
Yep.
All right. So now we're getting into a game that we actually just started called Start, Bench, and Cut. Are you ready?
I was born ready.
Let's do this. So first up, we got basketball. Start, bench, or cut. Elite three-point shooter, dominant point player, or lockdown perimeter defender. What you doing?
Such an elite lineup. That's a tough one. Okay. Well, like we said before, threes are more than twos.
Right.
So I am going to start my elite three-point shooter for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bench the lockdown perimeter defender. And this is so crazy because, like I said, I was a power forward center and I can't believe I'm going against my dominant post player, but I have to cut them because I can win a game with five guards.
Mm-hmm.
Because all we have to do is just switch up on the matchups. We'll be okay. We'll let the post player score a couple times, but if I have an elite three-point shooter, she's going to make sure that she puts up those shots for us and we're going to win the game. So I think we'll be all right without a dominant post player. Yep. Yep.
So I'm actually gonna copy you on that one. My reasoning more so is because we need that defense,
right?
Right. So in order to make sure that the other team don't keep scoring on us, I'm sorry, but a dominant post player, you're gonna have to sit this one out. I'm sorry.
So which one you starting? You starting your 3-point shooter?
Absolutely.
Or yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen games where the 3-point shooter was just eating every time.
Yeah, because let's think about it. Like, what if we got a team full of lockdown perimeter defenders but can't nobody shoot?
Like, what's the point?
We out here running track. That's what's going
literally,
on.
Literally, we're just conditioning. We're just sitting here conditioning.
That's about it. That's about it. All right.
So now let's step into the batter box. Next, we got ace pitcher, power hitter, speed on the bases. This one's nice. Who you starting, who you benching, who you cutting?
Ooh, this is tough. Being a former softball player, I used to love and envy girls who knew exactly when to steal bases because I just felt like that was like just the coolest thing in the world, especially when you would see them frantically like trying to like turn around and get you out.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that is so cool. But,
you know, I aspired to play softball, but then one of my homeboys told me, well, he played baseball, mm-hmm. but he told me that he got hit in the eye and it broke. Yeah, I was I'm not playing this game. I'm not playing no more.
I played pitcher one time and the ball hit me dead on in my shin. And after that, I was like, outfield me, please. Like, right. That's all I want.
Like, y'all be throwing.
Yes,
no,
girl.
Bro. Y'all not finna give me a concussion. No.
Yeah, it's dangerous for sure.
I'm done.
Okay, dog, this is tough. Let me see. I'm probably going to start my power hitter because, like you said, you got to score to win.
Right.
So power hitter is probably starting. And then ace pitcher is probably going to come next because I need somebody who knows how to throw the ball to the point where it confuses players on if they want to hit it or if they want to let it be a ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely need an ace pitcher out there who's controlling the defense. And then I guess I got to cut the speed on bases. I feel like as long as I got an ace pitcher and a power hitter, we should get a home run every time. And if the bases are loaded, that's 4 points. So, what's your franchise piece?
Well, you know, I never played softball, So I'm going to go off what I'm going to think.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
I'm definitely going to start off with my power hitter for sure.
Okay.
It just makes the most sense. Neither have I ever watched a softball game. So maybe we're gonna knock that off
this
year.
Oh, yeah, we definitely got to go some softball games.
Because I feel like you need the speed. You got to hairpin get to the bases.
Yeah.
So it's like I kind of want to bench my speed and cut my ace pitcher.
There are no wrong answers in this game.
You know, I know that, but something in my heart tells me it's just wrong. Well, okay, to be fair, I did watch baseball. My little cousins and my younger uncle definitely did play baseball. But, you know, I was a kid. All I seen was running, ball, hit, and that was it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's going to be mine.
Okay, so speed on the bases, you benching them?
Yeah.
Okay, and we're going to cut the pitcher?
Yeah.
Okay, y'all going to lose, but it's all good.
You know, Moving on. Well, we tried. We put up a good fight, I guess.
All right, last one.
We got tennis. Tennis. Most I know about tennis is Serena Williams.
Hey.
Shout out to her.
You know.
So we got the strong doubles team, number one singles player, and the overall team depth. Start, bench, or cut. What you doing? And this one's tricky. So
Yeah, it is tricky because what do you mean by overall team depth? I didn't even know. I don't know. Like,
don't know
team
either.
Depth, what does that mean? I don't know. But I'm going to go with strong doubles team. I'm going to start them because we need the points early on so that way if one of those girls are playing singles or one of those guys are playing singles later, we want to go ahead and win the game early on so they can recoup and be prepared for the singles matchup. So I think I'm going to start with the strong doubles team. I'm going to probably bench the overall team depth, and then I might cut my number one singles player because tennis, I won't say it's a team sport, but it is a strategical sport.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can win those doubles early and we have a strong lineup, I think we should be fine with singles, even if we are not as strong as singles. You know what I mean?
But I'm going to change and I'm going to start my strong doubles team.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bench my number one singles player and I'm going to have to cut the overall team depth.
Okay.
So yeah, that's all. That's what I got. I don't know much about tennis. Hopefully that does not make my team lose.
Hey, you know.
But if we lose, you know, we go watch film and we start again.
You know it. Different strokes for different folks, different picks, different perspectives. But that is what leveling the field is all about. We're not here to think the same. We're here to talk through it, and trust me, we will be revisiting a lot of these takes in March. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for tuning in to Leveling the Field. All right, Alani, take us home.
All right, y'all. It was so nice talking to y'all. So nice having y'all. But like we have already said, we're gonna revisit this March in what, next week, couple weeks. Have a great day. It is Saturday. It's currently 3:37.
Yeah.
So we still got the rest of the day to go do something.
Shout out to all the people that are supporting us and listening. Shout out to the women's basketball team. Shout out to the women's softball team. Shout out to the women's tennis team. Good luck on your game tomorrow. And so thank y'all so much for rocking with us here on WANM 90.5. I'm your host, Amia K, and we will catch y'all next week. Leveling the Field is produced in the studio of WANM FM 90.5 in the School of Journalism and Graphic Communications at Florida A&M University.